This episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress. From connectivity to autonomy, AI to machine learning, Ford has one simple goal: to improve mobility for its customers. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com. Hello, and thank you for listening to the Inside Transportation Podcast, a production of Inside.com. This is our weekly podcast where we discuss transportation trends that you need to know about to stay ahead of the curve. My name is Johan Marino. My co-host Jason is not in today, but we do have a very special guest. You may have seen the following company on season 4 of Shark Tank. Lugless was created to bypass checked luggage at the airport, using existing logistics networks to make the process of shipping luggage easier and cheaper than checking in a bag. Aaron Kearley is the president of Lugless. Kearley was the co-founder of a startup, Luggage Forward, that ended up merging with Lugless, and they've continued their journey ever since. So Aaron, thank you so much for joining us today on Inside Transportation. How's it going?
It's going well. Thanks for having me on, Johan.
Perfect, perfect. So why don't you tell us a little about your business and how long you've been in operation?
So Lugless is the first cost competitive alternative to checking your luggage with the airlines when you travel. And we leverage technology to make it super easy and intuitive to ship with UPS and FedEx at a discount price that's often less than checking with the airlines. And so we actually acquired the brand Lugless in 2014 and have been running. We sort of relaunched the whole company after that, and we've been running the business ever since.
I see, I see. So my first question here, something you might have to explain to our listeners: what's stopping customers from just taking their own products to a UPS store or FedEx office and working directly with the carrier? What kind of technology does Lugless offer where, you know, you need to have this middleman? Any thoughts there?
So the short answer is that it's actually cheaper and definitely easier to go to ship your luggage through UPS, through Lugless, instead of going direct to FedEx and UPS. So we pass on volume discounts. So Lugless is really always cheaper than going direct to the carriers. But we're also really laser focused on just luggage. So we're able to make shipping luggage simple and intuitive by really stripping out all the irrelevant features and functionalities offered by the carriers. Beyond that, I'd say we also have like better insurance to cover luggage specifically. And, you know, when things go wrong, we know who to contact, what to say, and how to get quick resolutions so we can guide users through that process.
I see. And explain the business model for us. What are some of the benefits of these support plans that you guys offer? Would shipping costs plus a support plan still be more affordable than checking in certain pieces of luggage with the airline carrier?
So the short answer is yes, it can still be less expensive. So Lugless is disrupting the checked baggage process by making it cheaper and easier and more reliable. And bringing luggage to the airport really never made sense. And with checked bag fees rising, it even made less sense. And then sort of COVID has helped sort of accelerate adoption of a better way to travel. And so you can think of us like a search engine for shipping labels. We find the lowest price for each scenario. And if that's all you need, you'll pay less than FedEx or UPS because of our volume pricing. But it will usually cost less than checking, especially if you value your time. And if you need additional features like more insurance, a more robust guarantee, doorstep pickup, those are the things we offer in our support plans.
Right.
This just gives people maximum flexibility depending on their needs.
Now, a support plan is a subscription service, correct? Like a monthly fee that you charge customers, or how does that kind of work?
No, it's a one-off thing. So, when you book a shipment on Lugless. You kind of enter in your information the way you'd search for an airline ticket, and we'll show you shipping rates based on the bags that you're shipping. And then, and then the support plan is in addition to those shipping rates. We have four support plans. Our minimal plan is complimentary. And then, you know, the other ones you can pay for. So it's a one-time thing based on your needs for that very shipment.
I see. Is Lugless in growth mode right now? Pivot mode, survival mode? What's the status of the company?
We are in growth mode. You'd think because we're a travel company that we'd be in survival mode.
Yeah.
So we're very fortunate to be in growth mode. When the pandemic hit in March, we really did see a dramatic drop in bookings. But then our business quickly rebounded. And by August, we were up about 250% compared to our previous high in February. So quite drastic growth. And this was during a time when air travel had actually dropped about 2/3, according to TSA data. So if you like relative to air travel drop, Lugless bookings grew close to 600%. And so, we're growing quickly.
Explain that a little bit for me, because travel has dropped off during the pandemic, as we're all aware. How has Lugless shifted its business for the COVID era?
So customers have told us two things that, you know, that make sense during this time for them when they're thinking about Lugless. The first is that they're really worried about contact points at the airport. So check-in lines, touching the kiosk, waiting at the baggage carousel. Lugless allows them to get in and out of the airport quickly. The second thing is people are taking longer trips, and longer trips means more luggage, right?
So
people are untethered from their offices, and you know, it's not uncommon for someone to rent an Airbnb for a month or two now. And so rather than checking 3, 4, 5 bags with the airlines, which could cost hundreds of dollars, they've turned to Lugless. In 2020, we actually saw the number of 3+ bag shipments grow more than twice as fast as our smaller shipments. So that's sort of what we're seeing.
I see. And we've also seen Americans re-embrace personal vehicle ownership and road trips as a form of travel. How has Lugless accommodated these travelers? And what are some other use cases people use Lugless for? You were mentioning multiple bags, multiple, you know, shipments that you might have for a longer trip. Have you seen people actually using Lugless as almost like a moving or shipping carrier or something like that?
So let me address the road trip thing first. So we did build Lugless to solve for the inconvenience of checking bags when flying, but the pandemic sort of expanded the use case to road trips because that's how a lot of people are traveling. And so, you know, people are taking longer trips. And we actually saw an increase in residential deliveries from about 65% of our deliveries in 2019 to 85% in 2020. And this is likely an increase in people going to Airbnbs instead of hotels. We also saw about a 10% increase in shipments under 500 miles, which I think is a good indicator of someone who might be driving instead of flying. So, you know, fortunately, Lugless remains relevant, even if you're going on a road trip, because, you know, there's less appetite to rent things like golf clubs and skis. And for a lot of people, there's not enough room in the space of your trunk, especially families. So it makes a lot of sense to ship stuff ahead. In terms of sort of use cases beyond travel, although we're really trying to be laser focused on making it cheap and easy to ship luggage, we have seen some other sort of, you know, trends for use of our service. One is students. So students moving in and out of the dorms and, at semester breaks, we get a lot of business from them shipping their stuff home and back. And then we've also worked with some tech-enabled moving companies that, for example, Shift Moving uses us to complement their offering of traditional moving. So, maybe if you only have a few things, you don't need to hire a mover. They refer people to us and, you know, we can ship stuff for them.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, I also saw you partnered with a few outlet malls. Why don't you tell us about those partnerships?
Yeah, so we're running a pilot with Tanger Premium Outlets. And so these outlet centers are generally located in travel destinations. And, right. and so they see people, you know, you go to Orlando, like maybe not during the pandemic, but you go to Orlando, you go to the outlet mall, you buy a bunch of stuff, and then you have to haul it home. And so we're giving shoppers the option to ship purchases home instead of checking more bags at the airport. And, it's going pretty well. We're still waiting for sort of the pandemic to lift a little bit before we really see how that works, though.
Did you form that partnership before the pandemic, or was that something that kind of sprung out of trying to find new ways to adapt this service?
Yeah, it sort of sprung out of the pandemic. We did some stuff during the holidays to sort of give people the option to ship gifts directly from the outlets with a handwritten note. And there was some uptake in that, which we were pretty excited about. So,
right, right. What do you think is going to change about travel after the pandemic, based on what you've observed, based on what Lugless has seen over the past few months?
Yeah. It's interesting. I think that a lot of the tech-enabled contactless travel solutions that have sort of made it safer to travel during the pandemic, I think those things are here to stay, like Lugless, for example, you know. And so people, they also just make it easier to travel. And so maybe you can check in on your phone instead of dealing with the kiosk at the airport. You can ship your bags ahead. We do believe that there is a ton of pent up demand for travel. And once the pandemic, resides a little bit, we believe that there's going to be a lot of growth in the travel space.
I see. With Lugless, have you ever held any discussions with airlines or other travel companies to partner with them? Or do you see Lugless as always operating independently from, I mean, I would call it the corporate system of travel. Yeah. What are some thoughts there?
So we actually were currently working with some airlines right now. The airline industry is interesting because I can give you a little history. In 2019, domestic airlines made about $1.5 billion in revenue from baggage fees.
Right. And
for some of the airlines,
huge
that was
revenue
as much
opportunity for them.
Yeah, exactly. And that was like as much as 20% of their overall revenue for some airlines. So they're sort of addicted to baggage fees, and they don't want, I'm sure they don't like what we're doing all the time, but there are some situations where we've been able to work together. So one scenario would be where there's like baggage yield issues. So smaller feeder flights going to like ski destinations where maybe there's a lot of skis on a flight. The airlines see us as an opportunity to kind of help them with that. The other thing is certain ticket holders don't have complimentary baggage. So whether you're maybe in a first class seat or you have status with an airline. We're working with some airlines in that space as well. So there are some opportunities where we're not cannibalizing their revenue. And they see us as, a good thing.
Right. Right. Now, closing things off, what can we expect from Lugless in the future? What are you guys working on? Anything you can tease, any thoughts there?
Yeah. I mean, we're working on some service improvements to reduce the friction around the shipping label, which can be tedious to print and attach to your suitcase. The pandemic has actually opened some doors with hotels and airlines, like I was just talking about. So there might be some more announcements in that space coming. And we're really just trying to, make it cheap and easy to ship luggage.
Yeah. So. One more follow-up for you here. So obviously the core service of transporting the luggage is not operated by Lugless. Do you ever envision a future where Lugless would actually serve as the logistics carrier? And, another follow-up to that one is, how do you keep customer experience high and satisfaction high when you're not actually providing that core service of transporting the packages, right? Because if, let's say there's a delay in a delivery, Lugless isn't the one transporting the luggage, so there's nothing you can do there, right? So how do you keep customers satisfied in that regard?
Yeah. Well, so the first question about starting our own logistics network, we do not have any plans to build our own logistics network. We think that one of our biggest strengths is that Lugless is backed by the reliability of UPS and FedEx, and they're very, very good at what they do. There is a lot of interesting activity in the first mile, last mile delivery space that we keep a pretty close eye on. Yeah. Right. You know, and so there are some services that we've sort of played around with that could help us strengthen our offering in that space. But I don't think we would ever launch our own service, more just sort of plug into these existing services. Yeah. So the other thing is, you know, I think as we achieve higher and higher package density, so if you have, I don't know, like a hotel where you're picking up 50 pieces of luggage a day or something, then there may be opportunities to do some consolidating and reduce costs through that sort of activity. And then to answer your second question about how do we maintain, you know, high service levels when we're not actually moving the luggage. So like I said, FedEx and UPS are very good at what they do. So fortunately, that's not a huge issue. But when things do go wrong, we have contacts within UPS and FedEx that can, we can expedite issues and get things resolved quickly. So, yeah, I mean, so that's sort of how we handle maintaining, you know, happy customers.
Perfect. Well, I'm excited to use Lugless whenever I go on an extended trip or something like that. If I have to carry around skis, you're the man.
Yeah.
Where can people learn more about Lugless and what you guys are doing?
You can just go to our website. It's Lugless, lugless.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much. That was Aaron Kearley on the Inside Transportation Podcast. And we'll be back with Megan Braley from ScootRoute right after the break.
Hey, everybody. Just want to let you know that this episode of Inside Transportation is sponsored by our friends at the Ford Motor Company, built on the belief that freedom of movement drives human progress from connectivity to autonomy. Ford has one simple goal, and that's to improve the mobility of its customers. Ford has been using technology to shape the future of transportation for over 100 years and is dedicated to solving the world's most pressing mobility issues. What you might not know is that Ford has a series of divisions that make these visions a reality. Ford X is Ford's venture incubator that unites entrepreneurs, designers, and engineers to shape the future of transportation. Ford's City Innovations team brings innovative ideas to life through community workshops, crowdsourcing initiatives, and citywide mobility challenges. And Spin, a property of Ford, brings e-scooter sharing to cities and college campuses. So here's your call to action. To learn more about Ford's work in mobility, autonomous vehicles, and their global efforts to improve mobility for its customers, visit corporate.ford.com. That's corporate.ford.com.
And we're back on the Inside Transportation Podcast with my next guest, Megan Braley, who is the founder of ScootRoute. Now, if you haven't heard of ScootRoute, ScootRoute helps you find the ideal route for every scooter journey by combining three different mapping technologies with real-time traffic data. ScootRoute has intelligence on speed limits, bike lanes, parking zones, sidewalk rules, and more. Very cool concept. So we're here with the founder today, who has extensive hands-on experience in launching new technology initiatives. She was previously a senior director of product management at Broadridge Financial Services. Without further ado, Megan, thank you for joining us on the Inside Transportation Podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
No worries. So tell us a little bit about ScootRoute, how long you've been in operation. You know, give us the story.
Sure. So the ScootRoute actually launched last August. So we've been in both app stores for about 6 months. However, it's been a brainchild of mine f- for over 10 years. So I've been riding a 50cc Vespa in Boston since 2009. And the need for a micromobility navigation app was really kind of clear to me from the get-go. I didn't have a car. I lived in the city. My family, I grew up, you know, just outside the Boston area, about 10 miles outside. And I would scoot from Boston to my family's house. But there was really no navigation app that kind of gave me the best route. However, I was the only kind of crazy person in Boston at the time who was scooting around in the dead of winter. And there was Bird and Lime had not entered the scene yet. So I kind of had tabled it for a little bit. Then we had the micromobility boom of 2018. And right. I decided that was the right time to launch Scootroot.
So what's the advantage of using Scootroot versus using, let's say, Google Maps?
Sure. So Google Maps and Waze, I mean, obviously everyone uses them. I use them when I'm driving, but it's very car-centric. There is a bike feature, but it's not really catered to scooters that can vary by speed. So when I talk about scooters, I talk about the e-scooters that everyone knows, like the kick scooters, like the electric right. kick scooters, like Lime. Yeah. But then there's also a Vespa, like I have, or even electric mopeds now. And so my Vespa goes 30 miles an hour. But a Lime or Bird, I think that caps out maybe at 15. And then 15, even yeah. in some cities, the regulations is 10 to 12. So my route is very different. And the roads that I can go on is very different than that of a Lime rider. So what Scootroot does and why it's different than Google and Waze is that I can create my Scootroot for me as a rider, as well as what I'm riding on. So I can change my preferences. Like I want to take a road that's 15 miles per hour or 30 miles per hour.
Oh, I see. So the end goal of this app is to make scooter riding safer for consumers. Is that the end goal?
Absolutely. The end goal is not only safer, but more fun, right? Like scooting in itself is fun, but you have to be careful. Like obviously there's safety things that you need to consider that is not even navigation based. You have to wear a helmet, don't wear flip-flops, you know, kind of things like that. Scootroot adds to the safety of it. But what makes it more fun is that if you're not worrying about where you want to go or where you're going to park, you can kind of just enjoy the ride a little bit more too.
I see. Now, here's a tough question. What's the revenue model for this app? What's the, how are you going to make any money?
Very good question. So right now it is a free app with in-app advertising. But I don't think this is going to come as a shock to you. I don't expect that to be like our real bread and butter. We're looking at other revenue models, which might include a paid version of the app. And then you'd have more premium features like allowing users to share a location or plan a route ahead of time and follow that while you're going. We're also talking with other shared scooter providers, so integrations within their app. Also potentially providing solutions for college campuses. There's a lot of need for, you know, kind of clearing out the pathways in college campuses so that they scooters know which paths they can zip on and where they should be parking and things like that.
I see. And where is this app currently available? Are you only available in select markets or is this available nationwide? Any thoughts there?
Yep. So the app is currently, it works in anywhere in the US. But right now we're focusing on the DC market. We want to make sure that we're really nailing the routing, that we're getting that user feedback, and then we're planning on applying the changes in the logic and the algorithm to the larger markets. So if you could put in an address from, you know, in California or Missouri or Boston, and it would work, but we're really focusing on one market right now to kind of hone the algorithm, and then we'll apply that to the other markets.
Now, I see. Have you discussed, you know, this service with any of these apps, you know, like a Lime or a Bird or a Spin? Have you had any discussions where it's like, hey, let me integrate this service into your app? Have you had any discussions like that?
Oh, yes. And there's definitely interest. which is really exciting. We've had some really great positive conversations. However, you know, we are still trying to figure out what that kind of model is going to look like. So we're looking, we've talked not only with specific shared scooter providers, but also like fleet managers. So those that may be providing the hardware and then also the apps for maybe some smaller shared scooter providers, not necessarily a Lime or a Bird. And we would be able to integrate with them at the kind of enterprise level.
I see. I see. Now you're the expert in all things micromobility, I'm sure, after creating this app. How sustainable do you see electric scooters being? What do they look like in 10 years? Because like you were mentioning, there are alternative forms of micromobility, not just electric kick scooters, but there's electric moped services now, as we're seeing with Revel and other companies. I know Spin is developing like a three-wheeled electric scooter that they're launching in Idaho soon. Yeah. What do you think the future of micromobility is? Do we continue seeing these electric kick scooters around cities in the US, or does it evolve into a different form of, you know, mobility?
I think we're going to see, and maybe this is my hope too, I think we're going to see a pretty awesome evolution. I think that everything going from is going to be electric based. So I don't think we're going to see a gas powered Vespa anymore in 10 years. I love the idea of a three-wheeled scooter. I think that there's going to be, things are going to be a lot more sustainable in terms of the environment where, you know, scooter providers are no longer having to drive around in a van to either change the location of a scooter or to recharge it. There's going to be swappable batteries, anti-tip to make more safe. I know, like, it's kind of funny, but my mother, who is in her 70s, is dying for some sort of scooter. But I want to give her a three-wheel one because I don't want her to fall off, you know. So I think there's going to be an evolution, and I think that it's going to be more than just the like an e-moped or an e-scooter. I think we're going to see a lot of changes in not just the hardware, but then also kind of like the technology of being able to know when you're on a sidewalk or if there's cars nearby. So I think it's going to be really fun to watch.
Right. And what I think is great about these alternative forms or these evolved forms of micromobility is that we can start seeing micromobility used for, let's say, last mile delivery or delivery services, or, you know, being able to accommodate disabled passengers right now, which are unable to use micromobility. And, you know, they usually have to use public transportation.
Absolutely. And I think that that's kind of what's so exciting about it, is because right now it seems like such like a small community of micromobility. You know, a lot of times when I talk about what I do and my company, people are like, micro what? And so I explain it to them. But I do think that the opportunity here is so huge. I think that if we do it right, like it's a game changer.
Yeah. So one question for you. I see Scootroot says they're making micromobility safer for women. What is something, explain that a little bit for us.
Sure. So if you think about a woman, like, we are very risk averse. We're more risk averse than men.
Absolutely.
And so in ridership right now, I think the statistic is about 75% of micromobility riders are men. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that women are a little more nervous to get on a scooter, to kind of take that chance. And then also, just from sheer paraphernalia, right? Like, when I get on my scooter, I've got my backpack that has my laptop in it. And then depending on the day, I have a gym bag and I have, you know, other things. So for me to get on a kick scooter sometimes isn't the best option for me. It's a moped would be easier. But what Scootroot does is it kind of takes that fear or like that risk-averse behavior away by giving you the route in order to kind of scoot.
I see. Some thoughts on how cities can make scooter riding or micromobility safer in general. I know there's this ongoing dilemma as to where scooters belong on the road. Some people say they belong on the sidewalk. Other people believe they're on the street with all these other cars. I know not every city has a bike lane system. So what are your thoughts on what cities can do to improve safety overall?
Yeah. First of all, I think no scooter should be off on the sidewalk. I would say all scooters need to be off the sidewalk. But there, in order for them to get off the sidewalk, then cities need to start creating, you know, dedicated bike lanes. And I think that that's really where they should live. And I think that's one of the kind of the biggest hurdles right now, right, is the infrastructure of the cities in order to do that. And I also think depending on the type of scooter you're on will also dictate where you should be. If you are on a Lime or a Bird, you should be in a bike lane. If you're on a moped, depending on how fast the traffic is going, right, I would feel very comfortable on my Vespa going on a street that's with traffic in a main lane with a car that's going, you know, 25 miles an hour. Anything faster than that, I want to be on the side of the road in a bike lane. I also think that it's very important on where cities put the bike lanes. One of the trends that I'm seeing in Boston now is that I'll try to explain it. It's like you can park your car, like parallel park your car, and then there's a bike lane and then the sidewalk. It's like a good step. My fear though is the passengers getting out of the car and, you know, a scooterist or a rider is taken out by an open door because the passenger is not kind of thinking about, you know, a biker being there. I think that it's going to be like a learned behavior. But I think that it's not just the dedicated bike lanes, but it's also where these in conjunction with a parked car.
I see. So obviously we're going through this pandemic. How has COVID-19 affected the development of this app, the rollout? Has there been any effect to your business from the pandemic?
Yep. Well, I'm not going to lie. I kind of panicked a little bit when everything shut down, as I'm sure everyone did. You know, it was last spring when everything happened, and I was planning on launching in August, which I ended up doing. And it would have been hard to launch Scootroot when there was no one outside and the streets were bare. Mm-hmm. But once cities kind of opened up a bit, there was a silver lining here for Scootroot and the micromobility industry in general. I do think that people who may have been a little bit nervous in the past are willing to take a chance in order to maintain that social distancing. And I think that, you know, the market has really changed. You had mentioned it earlier from the idea of this last mile of the commute. Maybe now it's the last 5 miles of a commute, or it's the whole commute. So I think that while the pandemic has been miserable for everybody, I think there is a silver lining here for the micromobility market.
Absolutely. We've been speaking to many people in micromobility, and they're saying that miles traveled has increased during the pandemic. Have you seen similar data from your users?
Absolutely. Yep. And it was interesting. I saw a huge uptick in kind of around the holidays. So I feel like a lot of people who may have not been, you know, traveling or taking public transportation to visit family were now using, you know, a shared scooter or any other type of micromobility device in order to kind of travel to their family's house, which was pretty cool to watch.
Very interesting. So wrapping things up here, and it's been a pleasure speaking with you about Scootroot, which is Megan's app. As a woman founder, what do you think the tech industry can do to encourage more women to take leadership and founder roles within the industry?
It's a good question, and it's a tough one. so I think the first being that the industry really needs to start investing in women-founded companies, right? In the past couple of years, when we're talking about the Fortune 500 companies, they are, or they have mandates from, you know, large institutions to have a diverse board of directors. Maybe they have to have like a minimum of percentage of female board members. And I think that, you know, VCs or people who are investing in these startups really kind of need to follow suit in terms of the percentage of their portfolio and how many women founded companies are in that portfolio. I think the statistic right now is about 2% of VC funding is invested in women-owned companies. Wow. So it's kind of hard to encourage women to become a founder with that statistic. So we really need to just start kind of from the top. And then I think, you know, there's an opportunity for big tech companies to potentially provide scholarships to females to go to school, you know, a mentorship program, like let's start them young.
Well said. Well, if you want to learn more about ScootRoot, what's the website, Megan?
www.scootroot.com.
Easy URL. There you go. ScootRoot. Megan Braley. Braley, sorry.
No worries.
Megan Braley from ScootRoot, thank you for joining us today. And we hope to hear from you again soon in the future.
Great. Thanks so much. It was my pleasure.
All right. Take care. Thanks for listening, everyone. And we'll see you all next week.